herzlich willkommen zu Vom Halm zum Glas, dem offiziellen Schulz-Podcast. Alles rund ums Brauen, Melzen und Destillieren. Mit Gesprächen zu Fachthemen, Erfolgsgeschichten und echten Typen aus der Branche.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Vom Halm zum Glas, the Kaspar Schulz podcast around brewing, malting and distilling. My name is Carolina and I'm sitting here in Croix, France with owner and managing director Jean-Christophe Cambier from Brasserie Cambier. If you want to take a deeper look into Kaspar Schulz and our projects, follow us on our social media channels where you get an insight of our work facilities and so on. So let's get started with the episode. Jean-Christophe, thank you for being here with us and taking your time for the interview.
Hello, bonjour.
So, where did the passion for beer come from and what led to you having your own brewery now?
Well, the passion was it's coming from a long time ago because here in north of France, it's a region of beer. Huh? It's really close to Belgium. So, people tend to drink more beer than wine. France is considered as a wine country, but here it's a beer country also. So we were talking already with my parents about brewing and breweries. And obviously when I was a student, I started to taste beers from the area. And then I did my studies and I'm an agronomist. It's like food science engineer. And during my career, before creating the brewery, I worked for a big industrial brewing company. It's called Heineken.
Oh, I think I know that.
Okay. So I was quality manager over there, and after a few years, the fact is that it was a good experience. But what I did not have is the possibility of creating new recipes. The craft side was not as developed as when you have your own small brewery like this one. So what I've decided, it was like 9 or 10 years ago, is just to make it, to do it, to create the brewery. Small-scale craft and with the possibility to make the quality and also the type of beers I wanted. That's the main thing. And also, people were telling me that I was a technician, but I could be a good commercial guy. So I have both, you know, I don't know if you say that, but casquette in French, both hats, you know, in my head. So the contact with people is important for me. Not only contact with technical people, but contact with customers, contact with everyone. So that's possible now with the brewery because obviously there's the production part, but there's also the tap room. And we can have people coming here, visit the brewery, and we can talk to them very easily. And that's really important for me to have contact with people.
So it's the best of both worlds.
Exactly.
Perfect. So and how has the brewery evolved since you founded it and what is your secret for success?
Well, you know, we made a small tour this morning and we had a first equipment. It was a 10 hectoliter brew house and we went to a first stage of production of 2000 hectoliter. And it went quite quick to get to that stage because when I started 8 years ago, there was not that boom, you know, of breweries in France. It was the start. I mean, there was already breweries, but now, you know, it's increased a lot. I think it's the country where there's most breweries in Europe, or maybe Germany is even higher, but there's more breweries in France than Belgium now, which is quite new. And so the success came from the fact that it's local. And also, you know, the quality is different maybe from what we already had in the supermarkets, for instance. So both combination made it successful. We started with the new equipment 2 years ago. And this is the equipment I bought from Kaspar Schulz. And with this new equipment, we are capable of producing a bit more beer, you know. So from that 2,000 hectoliter, we are going now to 5,000 and even 7,000 the next year. Because we went from a really local brewery to a more national brewery. When we say national, we have to take care. Huh? It's only in specialty shops. Craft shops or craft beer bars, you know, because we started to make hazy beers also, hazy IPAs and really different type of beers that made us recognized for making plenty of different styles, but always spotted on the style.
Okay, perfect. Are there particular ingredients or brewing techniques or beer styles the brewery really emphasizes?
It's an interesting question because we started with a lot of more Belgian style beers, because here, as I already said, it's really close to Belgium and people are, I would say, it's easy for them to drink Belgian beers. So we have our own yeast. That's important. We buy also yeast from different suppliers, dried ones, but we have two yeasts that are coming from a lab in Belgium, in Brussels, and it's our own proprietary yeast. I mean, it's the house yeast, we call that. So it makes a difference because not every breweries have the same yeast.
Yeah.
So we use that yeast for the saison. That's the first yeast we have. And we have also another yeast that we use for the blonde ale, the triple, and the amber. And it's a kind of signature for the brewery. But apart from that, we also make a new brand, which is called Cambier. It's very easy. It's my name. And that brand, we make any type of style. And we tend to brew two different styles a month. It's one-shot brews. Obviously, there's a lot of hazy IPAs, but not only hazy IPAs. Last year, we made a Kölsch that you probably know. It's a German style, very drinkable and very easy to have on tap. And when it's the summer, people like it. So this month, we brewed a beer with elderflower, because at the moment in the region, there's a lot of elderflower. So we made a special beer with this. It's a wheat beer, because now the summer is coming and people want to have low alcohol beers with freshness. Depending on the period of the year, we make different styles with the season.
So you produce a very wide variety, but with your own twist through the special yeast.
Yes, so the equipment is really capable of making any type of style. There's a lot of different options on that that we can play with to make different styles. For instance, we have that whirlpool cooling, which is possible. We can brew with different whirlpool temperatures. So we play on a lot of factors to make different types of beers, and the equipment we have clearly, have all the options to brew that type of products. Lots of discussion also with the Kaspar Schulz team, because sometimes we ask things and it's...
We have to make it
work. We have to create the recipe. It's a special one because like putting the elderflower, we put it in the lauter tun. So it's a quite specific process. After the boil, we go back to the lauter tun. But when you explain to the technicians what you want, we can create any type of recipe. And that's what I love with that type of equipment. That's what I want, because we're only just making like lager. We make any type of style, so the equipment needs to be capable of brewing any type of different style or brewing techniques.
Glad to hear that. So I saw you have two different lines of beer. The one is Cambier.
Yeah.
And Mongy.
Mongy, it's the name of the local tramway. So it's a really local name, and that's the local, brand. But it's the main production still, The blonde ale, it's 20% of the production. And the triple also is like 18%. So two beers make like 48% of the production. 38, sorry. Obviously, the Belgian style part is really important. This is why having our own yeast makes a lot of difference. And also people want that type of product. And then obviously we have the Double Citra, which is branded with Cambier. And it used to be a one-shot brew that we made maybe one time per year, but people were asking and asking and asking about this beer. So we made it permanent with the new equipment, because there's also a market for, hazy IPAs, but like modern styles, I would say. We make traditional styles and we make modern styles, but you can sell any type of beer. It's not the problem. It's just what you want to do. You want to brew. And for us, we enjoy brewing traditional styles. We enjoy brewing modern styles, because every time there's a lot of technique in behind. And we are really onto technique, onto details of brewing processes. So that's what we enjoy the most here, is trying to think about how we could make beer better every time.
Brew artists.
In a way.
Yeah. So it's a common practice that the standard beer styles in a brewery are named after the brewery itself, and the special brews often have the special creative names. So with your beer, it's the opposite. What's the reasoning behind that?
Well, the reason is that when I started the brewery, I did not want to have my name everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, after a few years, I don't mind anymore. I'm used to it now. It's a brand. People probably know it's my name, but they don't really care about this anymore. So, and there's another reason is I found that, but I did not know about this before creating the brewery, that my name, there's the name beer inside.
Yes.
So in old French, it means brewer. My family is not coming from a brewing background, you know, my grandparents are, but the name means brewer in old French. So this is not why we started to make Cambier beers, but it's interesting to know that. Maybe the genes come, my genes are coming from a brewer somewhere, which I don't know. Huh? But then there's another reason. Cambier brews the beer, but we brew styles. So there's no name on the beer. It's Cambier that makes a style. So on that brand, that's what we do. So if we make an hazy IPA, we will put a New England IPA with the type of hops because that talks to us much more than having a name which doesn't have an influence or doesn't have a relation with the style of the beer. That's more marketing to me, but it's also marketing what we do, but it's another way of making marketing. It's maybe less bullshit.
A good way to make marketing, in my opinion. So it was destiny.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know about this, but I don't talk a lot about this because the branding company, when they knew that they wanted to have Cambier everywhere, you know, because it's there's a storytelling behind this.
Yeah.
But because I don't have any family in my history being brewers, you know, I'm just not considering this as part of my background. But anyway, it means brewer.
So if you said that you brew a new beer every 2 weeks.
Yes,
so
roughly.
That's quite a lot. How many creations are there till this day?
Oh, with the new design, I know it's already been like 40 beers.
Okay.
Since the last 2 years, so it's a lot, but we focus on that, and also our customers want new styles, they want new beers, they want to taste new hops.
Try new
things. So we have a permanent beers that people rely on, like the triple, the IPA, and then we have all these one-shot brews where we can also experiment a bit more. So I talked about the elderflower, but soon we are going to brew a grut. It's a beer, but it's not a beer. In fact, there's no hops inside. It's a sour grut with rhubarb. And that's obviously, it's a one-shot brew, and we will see what people, if they like it or if they don't like it. But we already made some small brew tests because we have a small equipment. I did not show you, but we have a 20-liter brewing equipment, and we make some trials on it to know where we are going to place the beer, you know, and also the ingredients. We taste different types of fruits, different types of yeast, and then we decide, we think this yeast is much better for that style, so let's go with this one. We taste, you know, the trial, and all the brewers here, they come from a home brewing background. So they are really keen on making small brews, 20 liter, to experiment. And then we scale it up to the Caspar, and that's how we make all these new beers.
But it's a great way to find new styles, and because you get instant feedback from the customers.
So the Kölsch, we made the traditional Kölsch the first time, but then there's one of our brewers, Nate, he's American, and he said, yeah, Kölsch in the US, it's exploding because it's really drinkable. And we introduced Simcoe in the Kölsch, so we call it Simkölsch. For that beer, there was a name, but it's really related to the beer, in fact. And the Kölsch yeast, it's a really good yeast for biotransformation. And even with small dry hopping on the Simcoe, we had a really nice result on the nose. Instead of making the Kölsch again, we just did the tweaks on the recipe, and it's traditional method, but with Simcoe, which is a new hop from the US. So we experiment with that brand. And the Simkölsch, we are going to brew it again because it was really nice and we learned about that biotransformation like this.
I love that you try so much. It's perfect. And when the equipment is suitable for it, it's perfect. I know it's maybe difficult, but which are your top three beers from the last few years and why? Because I think it's hard to pick from all the beers that you already did.
Yeah, no, it's complicated because There's a lot of different beers that we made, which were quite different and quite good. But we make a sour beer with a raspberry. And to me, raspberry in sours works really well. And we added also rhubarb onto that beer. And to me, it's a really drinkable beer. The drinkability for me is really important. We also make in the winters more heavy beers. But to me, when you can have a session with a beer, it's really nice. So the sour, raspberry and rhubarb. Also, we make a New England IPA, but with French hops. So we call it New French IPA, like New England, but New French, because it's French hops. It's a derivative on the New England. It's all New England style. It means the base malts are wheat, oats, and pilsner. But the yeast also is clearly a yeast for that style. But introducing these French hops makes a difference. There's a difference in attenuation. There's a difference in aroma. So that beer is really different from the other ones. But it was important for me also to brew beers with, I would say, local ingredients. But French hops are not quite considered maybe worldwide as good hops. But in fact, not in north of France, but in east of France, they made some new varieties. They developed some new varieties which are quite interesting, like Mistral, Barbe Rouge, Elixir. And instead of doing a New England IPA with Citra or Mosaic, which are good hops, but plenty of breweries work with these hops, we try to differentiate and create our own small-scale products, I would say. And we also have water here, which is quite hard, and it's a really good water to brew black beers. So there's two black beers that we brew sometimes, and to me, it's the best that we can make. It's a black IPA, and there's also another style, it's a Baltic Porter. So I would add these two ones because I do love black beers also.
Okay. When you develop new beers, where do you start? Is there a particular approach or inspiration that guides you in creating new recipes?
Well, there's plenty of different factors. We tend to taste a lot of different things, a small quantity obviously, but so we are open to what other breweries brew. So it gives us some inspiration. And then trying to work with ingredients, local ingredients, it's another way to find new recipes, so the elderflower or the rhubarb. Then it's also a team work, because I'm not the only one who is saying, oh, we need to brew this. It's the team, the brewing team, that says to me, oh, we should be trying to do this because we think that's really good. I had one. I have an example, is hop water. It's a non-alcoholic beverage. It's only gaseified water with hops, you know, as a dry hop. And we had a few ones already, and we think it's really nice because we don't brew non-alcoholic beverages at the moment, non-alcoholic beers. But hop waters, there's no sugar. It's quite simple to produce. And you can taste hops without alcohol. I think it's great. So we had a few ones from other breweries because we do collaboration brews also. So we talk with other brewers, you know, in festivals or in life in general, and it makes us want to maybe, not this year, maybe next year. We don't have a plan, you know, like, oh, we need to launch that product by the end of June. Or it's just when we are ready and we think it's going to be a good product, we can launch it. Obviously, we won't launch it if it's not the good season. But if we are not ready for this year, obviously, next year, we are going to can some hop water.
And you can drink a lot of it.
yes, also. And when it's like hot like this today,
yes, very refreshing.
It's better to drink that.
Yeah. So I also saw that you are massively into the collaboration brew game.
Yeah, yeah.
And what would you say are your key learnings from brewing so much with other passionate beer enthusiasts?
Well, you always learn a lot from other people, from other technicians. So to me, it's an exchange. And it's not that everything is written in a book that you can buy. There's a lot of books about brewing techniques and lots of articles on internet. But sometimes experimentation is also a key part of the process of creating new beer. So when we talk to other brewers, you know, when you are open-minded, you learn techniques from other ones that you can probably apply in your own brewery. And it's the same for the other ones. So you can exchange best practices, maybe.
Win-win situation.
Yeah, exactly.
So you already told us that you were brewing on smaller equipment before. And what is the difference to the new equipment? How is it most noticeable?
Well, the main difference is that the new brewhouse is fully automated. It means that there's less handling, manual handling. So the previous system was all manual. It means that we always have someone on site to manipulate for the brew. It's a really good thing to learn. But when you start producing a bit more, it could be a bit too much, you know, for people, for brewers, because physically it's quite difficult. So the automation helps us to have less physical problems, I would say. To me, the other thing is that with fully automated equipment, you can produce more with not having too many brewers around, which I do consider as a good thing because it's a really technical job. So it's not that easy to find good brewers. And I prefer to have a small team, having good working environment, and having fully automated equipment. It's working like this because, as I previously said, the first brew is mashed in at 3 a.m. in the morning, but there's no one around. The first brewer is coming at like 8, and then we mash in the second brew at 11, and they only come during the day. And to me, working environment, working conditions, you don't have to leave that apart, you know. If you want people to stay in the brewery, if you want people to be happy, you have to also give them good working environment, good working procedures. So we have not had anyone leaving the company at the moment. So our head brewer, Remy, is here since nearly the beginning. And Nico, that you saw this morning, is the same. And Nate also has been here for a few years now because the working environment is not so bad, I would say.
It's very important, of course. So you already said that you try a lot with also regional ingredients, and your beer line, Moji, is called after the train. So are there other parts where the brewery played a role in promoting the beer culture here in the region?
I think the tourism also is quite an interesting part because since the beginning, we make tours every week on Saturdays and now even on Wednesday. So there's a lot of people who came just to visit, and we make tasting after that, and we explain the whole process. We make people to taste hops, smell hops, taste some different malts. And it's small visits, but we do every week tours. And now, you know, it's quite recognized that the region is a brewing tourism region. So there's not only our brewery, you know, there's I think like 20 or 30 breweries in the area that make tours. And there's even a label now for that specific thing that we work with the local government, I would say, and it's developing because the region wants to people to come here for the beer part of the production of beer, you know.
So you're beer ambassadors.
Yes, with because the brewery can be visited.
Perfect. Yes, I think it's really important because, of course, through my job, I know what's behind it. But when you drink a beer, you don't think so much about the whole process behind it. And when you see it, you know how much work there is put in. So
yeah, so the tours, it takes us like 1 hour and a half, and people are quite happy because we take a lot of time to explain. It's not a small tour that you do in 20 minutes. And a lot of people talk to us about the copper-cladded vessels, you know, because why we have copper, it's because we also make a lot of visits. I mean, the cleaning is really important. It's really important for us to show that the brewery is, because we make visits, we cannot just not clean properly things. And copper, there's a signification also for us, is that we brew traditional styles and we brew modern styles, and it's a really modern equipment, but the copper just makes you think that we also brew some really traditional styles.
And how can beer lovers experience the brewery apart from the tours? Do you make any or host any events or something?
Yes, so we have the tap room. So it's open from Wednesday to Saturdays, and you can just come and grab a beer and drink it on the terrace. There's a couple of food, you know, but it's not the main thing. But yeah, you can come here and spend 2 hours trying different beers. And some people even told us, oh, it's like going to a winery. We can taste different styles, different beers. So if anyone wants to taste a few beers, it's possible. We do free tastings, small glasses, but it's just for people, they know what they are going to buy. it's not something that you have in supermarkets. In supermarkets, you can only rely on the label. There's tasting sometimes, but here the experience is really different, obviously.
But I think it's a great concept because I can speak from experience. When you have to buy a whole bottle and you don't know how it tastes, it's just, you don't do it. So oftentimes, so when you can taste it beforehand, it's perfect because you have
the opportunity
to really experience or find your preferred beer style and cool. So what would you say is the most difficult part for brewers in the French beer market?
It's a good question. At the moment, the market is a bit crazy to me. Crazy means that there's plenty of different projects going around. And I hope that the market will still increase to handle all these new breweries. And I think also some projects are, from my point of view, maybe too big. I'm not hoping, but I'm really scared for our own brewery because it's 100% owned from myself. So it's a really independent brewery. And I tend to be quite preservative on the financial side. I don't take too many risks. So we increased production, but we tend to increase production when the finances of the brewery are enough to pay for that. And we are not going to have a situation where maybe in 2 years or 3 years we have to sell to someone or we have financial difficulties because the market is going down. So I'm really careful with this, you know, and scared also. And I hope there won't be too many breweries, you know, suffering from this in the future. That's probably something which is going to happen anyway, because there's too many actors at the moment. That's my point of view. Huh?
But I think you have a really wholesome concept and you have to stand out. And I think that's what you're doing. So
yeah, no. But I'm not too worried. But obviously, because
it's normal.
It's my brewery, you know. I'm already, when there's new investments, I'm always balancing between, okay, we can make more money or we can sell more beer, but then, you know, we'll be also more people, you know, and there's more risk. But also it's a good thing because people want more, you know, and then I'm just balancing it with the risk. Huh? So sometimes I decide not to do some projects because there's too many risks for me, or financial risk.
And what do you think, what does the future of brewing in general will look like in a few years?
Oh, it's a really interesting question also. So I know that now people, you know, customers, they know much more about beer than before because there's so many small breweries like us explaining also the styles. And I think it's going to increase even more. So there's not a pressure, but I think breweries need to be careful with the quality of what they brew, you know. And if you want to shine, you have to be really careful with that subject, to me. So that's the first thing, is the quality will increase from everyone. And then also probably the variety of styles is going to increase. Or maybe some styles we brew now won't be brewed in 5 years. Huh? 5 years ago, hazy IPAs were not the trend at all. And now it's booming. But maybe in 5 years, the boom is going to be on something else. Probably sours, but or lagers, but other styles. So we have always to adapt, you know. This is why we love to make plenty of different styles. We have plenty of recipes already available, you know, because the market is changing a lot at the moment. But apart from that consideration, there's also the traditional styles. And to me, the traditional styles will still be there, and maybe even more. I mean, you can put any type of products in the beer. You can even put donuts if you want. But I think there's a limit to that. And when people know more about beer, they are going also to get on more, you know, traditional styles, because these styles are really drinkable, like lagers, you know, sours. And I hope that people will get back to simple beers also.
Yeah, it's what we call a Trinkbier in Germany.
Okay.
Because you will have your different styles and all the craft beers. And then you get back to your drinking beer.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think it's really interesting because we have around a few traditional breweries, and they always do the same products, but it's well-balanced. They brew these beers for like 20 years and they know exactly what they do. Like we have DuPont around, you know. It's a Belgian brewery, but and these breweries, I think they have also a future because these beers is just perfect, you know.
You know what to expect and you can count on it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes, I think you built a pretty solid foundation of knowledge to adapt to how the market changes in the future. And we can already see how it will change a little bit because there's a boom of non-alcoholic beverages right now. Besides the hop water, do you have other experience with non-alcoholic beverages?
We start to see a bit of demand from customers. We were not really keen on brewing a non-alcoholic beer. Because to us, we did not have good ones. And it's complicated to brew that type of beer with a good quality, I mean, a good taste. But now there's new ingredients that came. So maybe it's possible. The only thing is that quite here at the brewery, we don't pasteurize the beer. We don't filter the beer. So if we brew a non-alcoholic beer, we have to be really careful with re-fermentation. That could happen after that because there's obviously sugars remaining. So that's a subject for me because I don't want to have bombs in the market. But then we see that there's a lot of demand. Not a lot, but there's a demand. We will probably do something about this in the next few years. But I don't know if it will be beer. Because to me, beer at the moment, there's still a couple of technical issues to that with the shelf life of the product. So this is why I was talking about hop water or maybe something else like kombucha that is also fermented. But with, to me, not kombucha, but hop water, there's less shelf life issues. It's simpler or maybe just doing soft drinks also, huh? Like lemonade. Or there's a lot of breweries already producing a lemonade. So yes, we will work on this, but it's not something like the biggest priority at the moment, because at the moment we don't produce enough beer. That's the main thing also, huh? That is why we bought new tanks. It's a big season at the moment, and the Monge IPA, we did not have any cakes for the last 2 weeks. In terms of priorities, I know there's demand, but there's also demand for our main beers, you know, for our core beers. So you cannot tackle everything at the same time. So you have to prioritize, and you have to prioritize with also your own business. So yes, we will do something, but it's not super urgent.
Yeah, we'll see how the market changes, but I think the hop water is a good starting point. Sounds tasty.
Me too.
And is there a difference between the French beer drinker and other consumers?
Generally or in north of France? Because to me it's already different. Here in the area, people tend to drink more beer. The consumption is 90 liters per capita, so it's like Belgium. It's not like Germany, but it's quite high compared to the average in France, which is 33 liters per year, per people. So the consumption nationally is one of the smallest one in Europe. So there's demand because the market is developing, because even if there's 1 liter more or 2 liters more per year, it's a lot of more production. But then people don't really probably know about all these styles, so they are quite keen on discovering things. With wine, it's different because we are a wine country, and people are more used to drink wine. They think they know more about wine, which is probably not the case, but it's not the same with beer. They don't have, I can't find the word, but discrepancies are, they're just free, you know? There's not that knowledge which is maybe changing their mind. So the beer, they taste it, they like it or they don't like it, but they're not just saying, oh, it's a Burgundy, or it's a... They don't make... things in their mind. So to me, I see that like this, you know, people want to taste, they like it, they don't like it, and they want to know how it's made, and interesting.
Yeah, but you do a pretty good job at raising awareness for producing beer, tasting beer, different ingredients. And what are your tips for aspiring brewers who want to develop their own beers? Are there any particular lessons from your own experience that you can pass
well,
on?
Well, to me, you have to obviously to be open-minded and just do your literature, I would say, do the what you call bibliography or just read, you know, a lot of different things. And then you have to taste to make your own taste panel, I would say. And then you have to experiment. Experimentation is a key part because it's not, as I previously said, it's not all written on the books. When we say craft, it means that you work with your hands. The knowledge, you can only probably get it from experimentation also.
Yeah, best way to learn is still trial and error.
With, you know, technical background, it's better because it's important to have knowledge, but that knowledge, you have to rely on your knowledge, but maybe sometimes the knowledge doesn't give you the whole thing, the whole picture. It probably gives you the picture to brew a good beer, but a great beer, there's a difference. And the experimentation probably opens you to the difference between brewing a good beer and a great beer.
Yes, and I think you do a pretty good job here.
Merci.
So we're already at the end of our podcast, Jean-Christophe. Thank you for sharing your experience and your knowledge with us. And the whole beer talk made me thirsty, so I'm looking forward for a little tasting. How about you?
Yeah, we can organize this.
Perfect. So for more podcasts, customer stories and product reviews, visit our blog Schulz Insight and feel free to drop a comment if you are missing some special content that you'd like to see. Thanks for listening and bye.
Bye-bye.
Alles rund ums Brauen, Melzen und Destillieren. Das war Vom Halm zum Glas, der exklusive Schulz-Podcast. Genusstechnik seit 1677. Made in Bamberg. Weitere Informationen finden Sie auf kasper-schulz.de. Dieser Podcast wurde produziert von Access Visuals, Film- und Videoproduktion aus Bamberg. Access-visuals.de